Okay, so we left off yesterday trying to figure out exactly what to take away from our Gemara when it tells us Nichalei Le'inish, Gufei first, and the context of the Gemara, just to refresh our memory, is that we find somebody who rents out an apartment from somewhere else, from someone else. And he can't move it somewhere else, but from someone else. And he discovers that to his shock and astonishment, there was no bedikah done, as he would have expected based on the justified presumption of the chazaka. So, okay, does he have the right to come back and say, Mekachtos, this is not what I thought I was getting into? And the Gemara essentially concludes, without really spelling out fully what all the implications are, but the Gemara essentially concludes that no, that people are happy to have to do mitzvot. And even if that should mean that he's going to have to spend money, let's say it's a place where the practice is to hire somebody to do bedikas chametz, so it's going to come out of his pocket, still it's good. Still it's good because people are happy to have mitzvot done with their money as well. So we need to figure out what exactly is the message of that Gemara, and how can it apply to other things which are perhaps a little bit more relevant to our daily lives, even outside the context of Pesach, such as, is there a klal that we can assume people are happy to have their property used for mitzvot, that would that allow us to avail ourselves of other people's property for the performance of mitzvot? So yesterday we tried to glean what we could about what our general knowledge is about such questions. Zach provided a lot of premises, and we mentioned many of them are indeed what we find in Poskim, but we have to provide a little bit of a framework to appreciate what exactly is going on here. So part of the important background in our sugya, the question of can you come and claim a mekachtos, which apparently you can't. Now let's assume at least a situation where you didn't specifically say this is the condition, that I want dafka, a place that is checked. If it's got any chametz issues, then it's not what I'm looking for, and I'm going somewhere else. If you didn't make that deal explicit beforehand, just under the general premise of cheskas baduk or the like, so can you say that now that I had to burden myself with bedikas chametz, this is not what I want, and I want to call the whole thing off, I want a total refund, so that you can't do. But the Ramban, that the Magen Mishnah quotes, the Ramban says that you do have the right to ask for that money back for the payment towards the bedikas chametz, because that was certainly something you weren't expecting to lay out when you agreed to the price. And if you ended up with these unfair expenses, so you do have a right to ask for that back. Although the Ram does not understand that way. And that's also a significant distinction to keep in mind as we look at how this applies to other things. So if what we can take away minimally from our Gemara is that we have an assumption that people are happy to do mitzvot, and therefore it's not credible to say, this isn't what I signed up for, I wouldn't want to get involved in a situation where I'm responsible for a mitzvah, bedikas chametz, we don't credit that because we assume people want to do mitzvot. So what is the scope of this idea? Is this some axiological premise that we should assume that every Jew always wants to do mitzvot and therefore that is a given no matter what? Is it basically just damen umdada? Are we saying that, you know, this is what we find, that people generally are nice and they're religious and they're happy about mitzvot, but who knows, things change and times change and we have to look at every circumstance as it is. Is that all we're saying here? Or is there anything more to it? You might be familiar with the words of the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, where the Rambam, all very often quoted, that we have a concept of Bezdin being kofeh on a get, that Bezdin under certain circumstances can compel the giving of a halachic divorce, despite the fact that we know that a get has to be given willingly, has to be given merasom. So how could that square? How could it be that a get can only be given willingly, and yet there are circumstances where a Bezdin can compel it? So to that, the Rambam writes, a big fetish, that that's because in those circumstances, the inner ratzon is actually what's being brought out. That if the Bezdin should ascertain, it's not always the case, but the Bezdin should ascertain is the situation of a mitzvah here. So then, when that's the circumstance, so everybody, the pintel yid, always wants to do the mitzvah, and therefore that's considered to be meiratzon. So is that what we're dealing with here? Is that what this Gemara is talking about? That basically, whatever the circumstances are, if there is a mitzvah, people are happy about it, regardless? Or are we just saying, you know, probably people are happy, and therefore we have to see what the facts are, but that's a general premise. So what could we take away from this in order to understand what would the rules be for borrowing other people's property, for taking other people's property in the service of a mitzvah? So the one source we have in Shas, a lot of Rishonim get involved with this, and I gave you some of them. I regret a little bit some that I didn't give you. We'll have to walk you through those. A few on the covers that probably would be especially valuable that I realized I didn't put on. I apologize. But the major tension from Shas itself, before you see Rishonim who take stands one way or another, is the Gemara in the second parak of Bava Metzia. That you saw, right? That the Gemara there says that the Daf Chav Tes, that if you borrow a Sefer Torah from someone, so we say in general, if you borrow anything, you don't have the right to lend it to someone else. And even if it's a Sefer Torah, and the original owner has the right to be makbid on that, and could be assumed to be makbid on that, and the Gemara says that, yeah, despite the fact that it's nichalele inish, in other words, you could have thought that people would be happy to have this happen. And kamash malon now. So the Gemara basically doesn't really tell you why it is, but just establishes that no, Michalei Linish doesn't go that far. So the takeaway from the Gemara basically seems to be, takeaway from the Gemara in Bava Metzia, that Michalei Linish doesn't allow you to take a Sefer Torah that you borrowed and lends it to somebody else. So, what is the distinction? Right, and this is a topic the Rishonim take up, but with or without the Rishonim, so what is the distinction between our Gemara and Psachim, where we say, yeah, you're happy to get in the situation where you have to pay for Bedikat Chametz, and the situation above Metzia, where the Gemara tells us it doesn't go that far to say that you can lend out somebody a Sefer Torah to another person. And figuring out what the resolution is going to affect the practical halacha of all the questions that we laid out yesterday, whether I can borrow somebody else's mitzvah objects to do a mitzvah when they're not around. So all of that is going to be affected by how you resolve this conflict, how you resolve this theorem. So, what would you say? What are the possible approaches to this question? Psachim, we say, you're happy. Bav Metzia, we say, your happiness doesn't go that far. So, what's the distinction between the two cases? Ari?
First camp, I think that machlokas and magnitude, whereas, you know, it's safer as far as, you know, huge expenses and very esteemed items. You know, just paying for a vacuum cleaner to like it's coming from the house, that's not such high magnitude. So one would be willing to go to that extent, not the extent of land and risk damaging a safer car.
Okay, so that's interesting, and that's definitely something that you see in some Sfarim, especially in the later Sfarim. I have to figure out whether that's explicit in the earlier Sfarim and the Rishonim or not. But that definitely is a svara that you see. If you're going to take that approach, which again certainly exists, so it sounds like what you're saying, what anyone who takes the approach is saying, is that basically this is just, this Gemara doesn't have any real significance as far as the mitzvah and spirituality and what Jews are all about. It's just about how we've come to see people's instincts. But it seems like the people I know, they're pretty happy about mitzvot and they're willing to go pretty far. How far? Not that far. Some people, you know, they're willing to take on a little bit of loss. They're not willing to take on a lot of loss. And that seems to be my polling of people, the season of polling. And this is the results of the survey. So I got authorization from the population to rack up a certain amount on the credit card, but not too much. That's what it sounds like. Daniel, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, and just to play devil's advocate a little bit,
ooh,
and argue why the fear maybe should be the opposite, meaning why the fear is even better, is because the Sefer Torah case is where you pass this thing. You're just lending it, and as a result, you would think that maybe it is Nicol Leilinish, because he's not really doing anything. But when it comes to the thumbnails, he has to actively do it, and then maybe because it requires so much effort, you wouldn't say Nicol Leilinish. So maybe you could then argue the opposite and say that he's active, it is good for him, and that's when we say Nicol Leilinish, and it's actually something substantial, but by Sefer Torah, where he passes, how can you possibly say Nicol Leilinish? It's not really...
Okay, so you just, as you said two opposite points. So if I'm going to force you to pick one to side with, which one would you side with?
I'd side with my second approach.
Okay, good move, because... Okay, so good move, because even though it's a little harder to understand, there's a Mordechai that says that. And that's why I regret a little bit not, this little mucker I regret leaving off, so please look at this tomorrow. There's a Mordechai in the second parak above Metzia like that. But it's building on a more common point. So first, one approach, and Ari's points are well taken, I want to come back to them in a second. But there is an approach, if you saw the Haggadot Maimoni, that was in the Makaris this morning, that distinguished between midaito and shalom midaito. That in the situation of Mechiras Hameis, so he knows what's going on. And just the question is, should we say, yeah, he knows, but he's unhappy. And therefore, it's a Mechav Tos. But in the situation of you're lending out somebody else to say for Torah, so he doesn't even know. He doesn't have any say in the matter. So that's a pretty big deal to assume somebody's willingness. We don't really know it's there. So that much she saw in the Haggadot Maimoni, and that's much the Mordechai says also. But then the Mordechai goes on to say that pretty much exactly what Daniel said, that maybe the difference is that when it comes to Chameitz, so he's got the tircha to do it himself. So Daniel, when I asked him to vote, so he said that I'll vote the second one because it gives me the resolution to the stira, but it's harder to understand, right? Isn't tircha bad? Aren't we generally anti-tircha? So the Kri Chadash and others, if they don't know what the Mordechai is getting at, seems a little difficult, and they kind of throw their hands up. Some later svarim, they suggest that maybe this you were saying a little bit also, is that if there's a tircha involved, so the language, the Mordechai, I apologize for not having looked at it before, please look inside, because the tircha, galmer meshabed nafshe, so he gets fully on board because of the tircha. So what does that mean? So it could mean that, okay, so he didn't ask for this situation, and we have to question whether it's a deal breaker for him. But once he's here, okay, so fine. I'll at least get a mitzvah Pimiluo, I'll get a mitzvah that I'm doing myself, and I'll have the tircha, and I'll have the whole credit for the mitzvah. But here, with the Sefer Torah, this guy's lending out myself, I'm not even involved in the mitzvah personally, so there's less reason to think that he's going to sign off on it. Is that what you were thinking along those lines?
Yeah, but it's interesting, because in Bava Metzia, when it comes to the case of the sesame seeds on the floor and the pomegranates, don't say that a bother is something that's better. Over there we say that if it's a bigger bother, then he wouldn't do it, right?
So here, right, but here the mitzvah part is what makes it make sense.
There's mitzvah also.
True. Right, but here the mitzvah b'dikas chametz having its own independent value to it. I mean, you're right, maybe the chiluk is not so strong. But the idea, that's why the language is a little surprising. But that's how some suggest in the Sefer Sei Sofim, the Sefer you can find on Mesach Shach, and he quotes such an approach. But the Chassam Sofer also deals with this in the Tshuva. Menachem Yerkamis? Okay, so it's up to you. Some sofer will be mechel piyuach. Either way, but alright. So some sofer first notes. He says first he quotes that Mordechai, that which is essentially the same as Aruch Maimon. He just notes from Mordechai. Okay, this distinction between das and not das, and he says very difficult. Just that part is difficult. Before the second part that Daniel was adding, it's the first part. The distinction between das and no das is difficult. And he notes that the Ramah doesn't quote it, and the Ramah and the Darchei Moshe doesn't quote it, even though the Ramah very often quotes Mordechai. He knew all the Mordechai, but he doesn't quote this one. He thinks because it's inherently difficult. He says because to say that this is different because it's midaito, but what's the difference between something not midaito and something where the guy is screaming, "I'm not happy about this," even though he knows about it? So if he's saying I'm not happy, that should be no better than shol midaito. So to say that there's some advantage here because he knows about it, when he knows and he's objecting, finds that very difficult. But then he goes on to say, he says, difficult enough, that's why the Ramah and the Darchei Moshe didn't quote it. But suggests that maybe the two halves of the Mordechai come together. That really, if it's shalom midaito, it's no better if it's midaito and he's upset about it. So if he's got a gun to his head and he's saying, "I don't want it," so that still shouldn't be any better on the surface than him not even knowing. But he says it's the second part that makes the first part make sense. So, okay, fine. He wouldn't have asked for the situation. But at the end of the day, he's getting on board. And he's even reaching into his wallet to pay someone because he recognizes he has a chiyuv here. So that's what makes it more midaito. You would have said that just I know about it doesn't help if it's against my will. But lemaisa, once I'm saying, okay, I'm here, what can I do? I'm signing on now. So that makes it something. That makes it midaito, and that makes it more than you would have with the Sefer Torah or Talos situation. Yes, Daniel?
Just to clarify, we're saying that Shlomi Daito makes it that the person wouldn't necessarily want the mitzvah?
Well, we can't assume that he's happy with it. He doesn't even know about it. If we assume it's his chutz. Now there, it's a big discussion, just parenthetically, going to bring that up. So the Gemara says, Zachem lo'adam shalem ufanav, that we can credit somebody with something when he's not there to agree to it. But it's a big discussion in the Sfarim, based on Shum Sadeshan and others, if that's still true when it involves taking away something from you. So do we say, Zachen me'adam shalei b'fana? Now, if we could calculate something to be a tzchus, but it involves taking away, could be, but it's very debatable. And it's the topic of a big machlokus. Like being mafish maestros from somebody without their knowledge, because you'll end up being matir their food. It's a big discussion. Comes up in the context of chametz also. You know, parenthetically, can you sell someone's chametz if they if they're not conscious, or they don't want, you know, et cetera, you're taking away their chametz. The alternative is all going to come after if you don't sell it. So there's a whole wealth of discussion about that. So we don't know that we can use zachen for that purpose. And we don't know if it's called a schus. You know, to say that the schus of the mitzvah overrides the schus of overrides the loss of the money, we don't know that for sure. But here, just to utilize this term of nichlele inish, so some Rishonim make this distinction that maybe you need to know about it in order then we can say, all right, you know about it, you're happy about it. But to say that you want it when you don't know about it, maybe that's too much. So that is the view you find in Rishonim that is not really what's quoted in the later Sfarim. It's not really what's quoted in the Poskim. So the view that makes it into the Poskim is more a different approach, which the Shita Mekubetzes quotes from the Ritva, and you find in a few other places as well. This they did give you to look at. So this closer to what Ari said, but there's a not necessarily fully what Ari said, and we'll see. But that maybe the issue is there a loss to the owner or not? And the assumption being that the Sefer Torah, and this is extended in the Rishonim to, say, Talis or the like, that theoretically there is a risk of damage. And if there's a risk of damage, so then maybe that's going to be a loss, and maybe the owner is not going to be okay with that. So on the surface, do you want to comment on that?
What about in the case where you have to pay for somebody to do the zika?
Okay, so that's definitely going to be something we have to figure out. But let's see if it's a fatal problem or not. All right, so on the surface, that's the distinction.
Also you also have the guy could be over in the area when he's high coverage. If he doesn't have time to be able to do the zika, is that considered a loss?
It is, but there you're not automatically chayav karis. You're only chayav karis if you actually eat it. True. But they don't necessarily all come from the same place. That's his responsibility. So just to kind of lay this out, so on the surface, the distinction is Rishonim are invoking is that in the case of chametz, there isn't a hefsid. And in the case of the Sefer Torah, there's potential hefsid. So on the surface, this is where Ari was going before, that even before we get to Ari's point where he distinguished between a big hefsid and a smaller hefsid. So on the surface, the distinction could be hefsid or not. Now, Zaniya was just asking, well, what do you mean there's no hefsid? You had to pay for the bedikah like the Gemara said. Well, according to the Ramban, it's better because the Ramban says, no, you're not really paying for the bedikah because you get to subtract that from the bill. So you'll be covered. Now, okay, it's not nothing because we all know the time value of money. And either lay it out and get paid back later, or really, Lemaisa would say that clear is paid at the end, so really you're going to get this subtracted from your bill, but that's still going to happen later, and now you have to pay the checker now. So it is a little bit of a loss. So maybe there is basis for that distinction between little and more. But the question becomes a little more powerful, as Chassam Sofer also notes, that what about the view of the Ran, that you're not going to get paid back? So then Daniel's question comes back. There is a cost for the Vedikas Chametz. So how do we then distinguish between the two? So is it just a matter of degree? Small cost versus big cost? Or is there any other way to draw a distinction? Zach?
It could be frequency.
Okay.
Like the Zika is not going to happen so often. It can only happen once a year. Whereas by Sefer Torah, people could start borrowing it every day from this person, and then you for sure wouldn't agree.
Okay, so basically it still boils down to a question of degree. It's saying that B'dikas Chametz is more controlled and limited. But it's a Sefer Torah, so it's not a fundamentally different approach. Saying that Sefer Torah getting very damaged is a matter of degree, and you're saying frequency is also a matter of degree. It could happen so often that he's not going to be happy with it. Now, the truth is, frequency is a factor in this area of halacha. We'll get to a little bit later. But I actually think it comes from a slightly different place. We'll see. Daniel?
Whether or not you're actually going to be gaining from the situation, in the sense that by chametz, when the guy doesn't do the bedikah, you're actually going to for sure be doing the mitzvah, I mean, hopefully, bedikah, whereas when it comes to Sefer Torah, who says you're going to be assuming that you're not getting the chutz from him taking your Sefer Torah and learning with it, who says you'll actually be using the Sefer Torah at that time to learn from it?
So that should be more reason to lend it out.
That's why you say, by chametz, because you're actually for sure going to be getting the mitzvah of doing the bedikah yourself.
So,
not necessarily.
So just to zero the emphasis, is it yourself versus the other guy, really?
Right.
That's really the key point from what you're saying. Right, so that could be it. Also, right, you know, that's something that you find more so in some later sfarim, that maybe I'm happy with my own mitzvos. But how do you know that I'm happy for other people to do mitzvos with my property? Maybe that's not so obvious. Now, parenthetically, it's interesting here, and this is something we also have to clarify, that, and this I think I gave you a source to look at, Gemara in Ksubis, that, and you have to figure out how far to go with this, that if somebody lends out my Sefer Torah to somebody else, there's actually two potential kinds of mitzvot that could be happening there. Right, that on the one hand, you might think that I should be happy about it because my Sefer Torah is being used for a mitzvah. So, nichalei le'inish, that a mitzvah should happen with one's property. Or, maybe no, maybe it's enough that the Gemara in Maseches Ketubos says it breaks in a pasuk, that it's a particular tzchus and mitzvah for somebody to have his property used by others for good things. So that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is basically the chesed. So to give a little synergy, this morning in Avos Chesed, so we were talking about, earlier, more yesterday, today we kind of switched over, we're talking in Avos Chesed about the mitzvah of lending money, but also lending property. So intertwined with that whole idea is that if I have resources that I can provide to others to fulfill mitzvot with, so that is itself a mitzvah. So what mitzvah are we talking about? It could be either. Right? It's a mitzvah of having my Sefer Torah used, or it's a mitzvah I get from lending my Sefer Torah, and you're lending my property out on my behalf. So we have to figure out, am I doing the mitzvah here? Like, it's basically a chetzer or gavra kind of question. Is that I'm happy to have the chetzer that I own used for a mitzvah? Or is it that I'm happy because I'm credited with a mitzvah? Because if so, it would be closer to what we're talking about in our Gemara, where it's my mitzvah now to search the house. Daniel?
Even more, like you say, that the case is where you're paying somebody else to do it in the first place. So maybe that would equate something more to get rid of that.
Assuming that I lose the mitzvah by paying someone else.
Well, not actually losing the mitzvah, but making it a different degree, I guess, now that back to the degree.
Yeah, and it's an interesting question also how much that, we normally say mitzvah bo yosem v'shlucho. Right, that it's better to do a mitzvah yourself rather than to have somebody else do it. And we've mentioned in the past that it's an interesting question how relevant that should be for Bedikas Chametz. Because is Bedikas Chametz really just about a result of having a clean house, or is it about a affirmative merit that you have in pursuing the Chametz? So here, when the Gemara talks about hiring somebody, so there is a view of the Yismach Moshe that's quoted in general, but the raya the Yismach Moshe brings actually is from our Gemara, that it says that even though we say mitzvah bo yosem b'shlucho, but that's not true if you pay someone. That when we say it's better for you to do it yourself, that if you could just ask somebody as a favor to do it for you, better you should do it than have some other guy take over your task. But if you're paying, so then that cancels out the preference for doing it yourself. It sounds like what he means is that the whole idea of mitzvah b'gufo yosem v'shlucho, Rashi in Maseches Kiddushin, and Daf Mem Aleph, Rashi says that the reason we say mitzvah bo yosem v'shlucho is l'fum tzar agra, that you get more schar mitzvah for the more you put into it. So if I could do a mitzvah two ways, either I could work hard and do it, or I could lay on my couch and have somebody else do it. So there's a kiyum mitzvah in both cases, but the schar is going to be greater if I'm putting the effort in. So what the Yismach Moshe seems to be saying is that, yeah, but I'll also get schar if I take a hit in the pocketbook. If it's going to hurt me, so to speak, it's going to take something out of me to have to pay somebody. So maybe that's also considered to be equivalent to doing it myself. So there's a whole history behind what this Gemara is actually telling us about that point. But it seems certainly on a basic level that you're fulfilling the mitzvah yourself. In the case of Bedikas Chametz. While in the case of the Sefer Torah being lent out to a third party, it's questionable whether or not that's your mitzvah. But I would point to something a little more fundamental. And if you look in the language of the Ritva that Tashita Mekubetzus quotes, and there are other Rishonim who have the same idea. And, for example, the Nimuki Yosef, which I can give you a look at if you want, but it's a little harder to find, so I didn't put it on the list. But Nimuki Yosef and Hilchot Tzitzis, where they point to a certain factor which I think might be the key here. And it's not necessarily about whether there's a hefset at all or whether the hefset is big or small. But the issue is that because the Sefer Torah may end up becoming damaged and may end up unusable, what's the effect going to be? The original owner is going to kill the golden goose. Right? The original owner is not going to be able to continue doing mitzvot with it. So maybe, yes, Nichalei Le'inish, people want mitzvahs, but not that's going to cancel out their own mitzvah. So if my letting my Sefer Torah be lent out is going to risk my own continued usage of the Sefer Torah, so then maybe that's a different story. So maybe what emerges from this view in the Rishonim is that the Iker concern is that really, yes, we can derive from our Gemara that there is a general acquiescence to letting your property be used for mitzvah. And it's not even going to be held back if there's some degree of hesed. But if the hesed is going to impact the owner's mitzvahs overall, he's going to end up with fewer mitzvahs or risking having fewer mitzvahs. So then the same nichole, the same general preference for mitzvahs is going to cut the other way. So if we can guarantee, or if we can at least be reasonably confident, that the owner is going to get more mitzvahs, fine. But if the more mitzvahs may end up costing him mitzvahs in the end, that's where we get more nervous. That might be a very significant detail to zero in on, more than just the overall question of, is there a hefsid? How much hefsid? What's the credit card limit? How much hefsid is he willing to risk? Maybe it's not so much about that, which would make it kind of a more prosaic idea that, yeah, people like mitzvahs as long as it's not going to hurt too much. But maybe it's all to coming to strengthen the main idea that, yes, we assume Jews like mitzvahs. But they're not going to trade their own mitzvahs for this one-time loan. So if this loan is going to endanger their mitzvahs overall, so then maybe they're not going to be so happy with it. Zach, what would you add?
I was just going to ask if it's realistic for you to make a photo like that to really make it puzzle. So I guess someone could spill something on it.
Yeah, it could get ripped. It could get lost. You know, it depends. What we're talking, say, puzzle for me for Kriya, so that's actually an even bigger risk if that's what we're talking about. If we're talking about just some getting messed up and some of them that for learning purposes, it's also theoretically true. But there is some degree of variability and subjectivity in it. So it's interesting, and this is part of what you put on the table yesterday. So how does this play out? And I'll also note one other chiluk that you find in some svarim, that the difference between whatever hesed may come from bedikas chametz, right, whether it's like the Ran and you're not getting compensated for this hiring of somebody else, or even like the Ramban, you are being compensated, but you're losing a little time value of money because it's not going to come up till later. So why that hesed we could tolerate, and maybe the hefsid of the Sefer Torah we can't tolerate. So also there is the svar, which you find in some svarim, that the hefsid in B'dikas Chametz is part of the mitzvah, is coming towards the Kiyum HaMitzvah. So it costs money to get the B'dikas Chametz done. Okay, so you're willing to pursue the mitzvah at a cost. And your love of mitzvahs is also going to be willing to absorb a cost for the mitzvah. But if you're worried about damage to the property, to the Sefer Torah or whatever item it is, so then that's not going to be damage going towards the Kiyum Mitzvah. So in other words, not just that it may actually stop you from being the kind for the future mitzvahs, but also it's just not an investment in the mitzvah. The cost on the B'dikas Chametz, whether it's paid back later or not, that's an investment in the mitzvah. The possible damage to your chepsa item is not an investment in the mitzvah. And we don't know that people are necessarily okay with that. Daniel? Well, then you also get into the question of who really is the Balaam of the mitzvah. So we know that clearly when there are different candidates for a mitzvah, there is a preference for the actual mechuyev to be doing it. And here, part of the whole question really is, and this is what we were discussing in the previous part of the sugya, is where does the socher even really come in when it's not his chametz and when he's coming in later? So his role here is already a little undefined. as far as what the nature of his chiyuv is, and it seems to be technicality to some extent. You know, and it's even a question whether really it is a full mitzvah for him, or maybe it's just a kind of default mitzvah because the real obligation is on the owner, but because he's now left with a chametzik house, whatever word you want to say, a chametzish house, so okay, he can't be in a chametzish house over Pesach, so now he's got kind of a secondary obligation to fix it. But it's not necessarily so powerful that he would want to take it over from the first guy. Now, I'll just mention it because you're bringing it up. Parenthetically, I was going to mention this later, but I'll just mention it parenthetically now. There is an interesting discussion in Poskim have. What about the exact opposite of this scenario that the Gemara describes? That let's say, and this is, you know, it's not what you're thinking, but it's interesting there is such a discussion because you're mentioning it. What if you have somebody who rents out a house for week of Pesach? Dafka, he wants to do Bedikas Chametz. He is very excited about this. So he expects, okay, I'll rent out a house before the 14th, and I'll be there, and I will be very excited. I'm bringing my kids with. It's going to be a whole educational thing. I'm going to actually do Bedikas Chametz in this new place. It's going to be fantastic. And then he gets there, and there's a note from the owner. Hi, hope you enjoy the place. Don't worry, I did all the Bedikas Chametz for you. Everything's fine. There's nothing to look for. Enjoy. And now he says, that's not what I signed up for. I signed up for having Bedikas Chametz. I'm excited about the mitzvah, and you stole it from me. Does he have a taina there? Of any kind? And that's an interesting discussion. Spoiler alert, you know, they talk about in general, we talked about a little bit day one. It's going to come up again in a few days when we talk about Tashbitzu, about the idea that there is a notion of paying somebody if you steal their mitzvah. Those were with us last June. We were talking about Kisu Hadam. It came up, the whole question. That's where the Gemara talks about it primarily, that if somebody has a mitzvah obligation and you grab it before they do, you have to pay them Asar Zehuvim. So it's a discussion in Poskim. You say that here also, if this guy stole your Bedikas Chametz that you thought you were going to get, and he did it for you first. So you have a complaint that way. So that's parenthetically a whole interesting discussion. But Minasam, we're assuming no. We're assuming you're not interested particularly in doing Bedikas Chametz. And the real mitzvah really should have been on the owner, but he left it for you. Okay, so now you're stuck. So can you say, get me out of this, the whole thing is a mistake? So the Gemara says, no, you're happy enough about mitzvot that you can't say the fact that you got left for the mitzvah is a basis to cancel your whole rental. Yeah?
Maybe you say that based on that, maybe that's the distinction between Chametz and Torah. That by Chametz, it's really something that's extra, something that you really didn't have the ability to do beforehand. After the Torah, something you always had the opportunity to do, or something that you own, something that you know, you could have always done. This is really something that you weren't expecting, something that happened to just come into your possession because of the fact that you didn't do it.
And that makes it better or worse? You sound like that makes
better,
it better, even though it's saying you don't want it, but still, really, the principal yid does want it. But if we weren't worried about the kilkul, you could say, but now I also get to lend it out. That's even better. Assuming that they're in conflict with each other. But right now, it's in the hands of somebody else, right? So I lent the same authority to another person. So today, I don't have it one way or another. So the only question is, while he already has it, could he then assume he could give it to his neighbor? So the concern is not that I won't be using it then, but the concern is that maybe it'll get broken or ripped in the possession of the neighbor, and that's not what I want. Therefore, I wouldn't allow him to do this because I'd be more protective. Okay, so it's interesting. So with all of this background, so once you get to the poskim, so it's interesting that the main svara in the Rishonim that survives to the level of Psak, that gets incorporated into the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and the Leger Svarim, is this idea that there is a general nichole, general people are happy to have mitzvahs done, but they're also concerned about loss. And that the two are balanced against each other. And what I would maybe argue, so think about whether you agree with this or not, and so definitely feel free to look back at sources again later and see if you agree, that on the surface, the discussion is all about treating it kind of as an umdana. You know, what are people makbid on, what are people not makbid on? But I think, in essence, it's about something more fundamental. So let me explain what I mean. When I say it's like an umdana, like let's say, you know, you have a coworker who, back when that everybody's not on Zoom, so every day he comes into work with a box of donuts. And if you were to steal his donuts, so that's a gezel. But let's say he's been doing this for years, and he says, I buy the donuts, and I put them by the front of the office, and kol dichvin yeseviyechel, you know that the donuts are for everybody. So even though it's his donuts, but it's very yadua, it's already been well known for a long time that the donuts are available for whoever wants to take. So normally it would have been Gezel to take his donuts, except that it's very clear, it was unquestionable to the population there that he is happy to have people take the donuts. So are we talking about something that's basically equivalent to that? It's no different, so to speak, than the donuts. It's just we're evaluating what people want. This guy, it's known he's happy to have people take his donuts, and people are happy to have mitzvahs done, so the same idea, it's just applying the same svara to different circumstances? Or is it something more fundamental, that a mitzvah is inherently valuable and Jews want to do mitzvos, and therefore there is an inherent agreement to allow mitzvahs? So on the surface, when you look at the contemporary poskim, and like I said, a lot of what Zach said yesterday is consistent with what you will find, that it seems like it's the first. It seems like it's similar to the donuts, and we basically have to figure out, okay, this guy likes having people take his donuts, somebody else we don't know, and we have to figure out the facts in every circumstance. And it looks like that's what's happening here also. I'm not sure. So what do you find in the post? You find in the Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Yud Dalet, that the Mechaber quotes from a view that's been Rishon and it's been Rebbeinu Yerucham, as he notes in the Beis Yosef, he quotes it from Rebbeinu Yerucham, there's also a Rush in Chulin, it's very similar, where he writes that, let's say, if somebody has a talus that's lying around in shul, and people want to use the talus, so then they can do so, but they have to be careful. So, for example, the Kepeda that is mentioned in the Rabbeinu Yerucham, is also in Muki Yosef, also has a similar idea, that if it was found, when you found it, it was folded up, when you put it back, it also has to be folded up. Because, presumably, that's what a person wants. Okay, he's happy to let you use his talus, but you got to leave it the way you found it. So if he left it folded up, you should put it back folded up. So, here it sounds, again, like we're measuring levels of kveda, that he'll be okay with it as long as you put it back the way it was, and he won't be okay with it if you don't put it back the way it was. And the Muki Yosef in particular emphasizes that the reason it's okay is because it's not likely that this is going to result in kilui hakaren, meaning that the principle, the item itself, is not likely to become destroyed through this usage. In contrast to what we were concerned about the Sefer Torah. So what you find in the Shulchan Aruch and in the early poskim is that there is a general allowance for things like that, to use a Sefer Torah, to use a talis or a tefillin rather, because people are okay with that, as long as you put it back the way it was. But not Sfarim, the Ramah emphasizes, that when it comes to Sfarim, people are going to be more concerned that the Sfarim are going to be damaged. So what emerges from that generation of Sfak, from the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, is that talis, tefillin, yes, people are okay with that as long as you put it back the way it was. Sfarim, no. Now, what's also interesting is, and I think Zach was alluding to this yesterday also, that nowadays, if you were to take a survey, you'd probably find a flipped attitude. That if you were to ask people, what are they more comfortable with? Can they use their Sfarim that are left on the table, or can they use their talis and tefillin? They would probably have the opposite approach from what you see in the Shulchan Aruch. That Sfarim are cheap, relatively, compared to what it was, whether or not you think they're cheap when you go to the Sfarim store, but compared to what was involved in producing a readable text before modern technology, for sure. So Sfarim nowadays are very easily obtained and replaceable, and not so personal. While tefillin, I don't know how people are so comfortable with somebody taking the tefillin and putting them on. Now, of course, you want to be very current, so you put in pandemic protocols. It's going to take on a whole different level of kpeda, what people are going to allow in terms of using stuff. Even the shuls are saying, bring your own sidurim, bring your own chumashim. It's a different, whole different era. But setting aside the pandemic situation, so it seems like this is flipped, and that's the point that Ben Ish Chai makes. For a little synergy, the Ben Ish Chai is in Parshas Lech Lecha. In this week's Parsha, the Ben Ish Chai has discussed this, and he makes that the thing of the Bezman is different. And we have a lot of other details that the post can invoke just to also address other concerns of Kepeda, that first of all, it should be something that's found in a public place. You don't go breaking into someone's house in order to get their items. The person knowingly left it in a public place, left it in the shul or in the Beis Medrash. Hasn't expressed that he is makbid when people are using it. And if he was there, you would ask him. It's just the situation is that he's not there. And they also add, as the Bach notes, that, was it Zach or Ari, somebody mentioned before about whether it's going to happen frequently. I think Zach mentioned frequency. So here in this case, the Bach says only Dakroy, that if it's once in a while, you can't just decide that I'm going to use it every day, right? So there's an early minion, a late minion, so I'll come to the late minion, and I won't have to buy talis and tefillin, because I'll just, the other guy who's there in the early minion lifts his talis and tefillin there every day, so I can come for the second minion and just use his. Now, that also probably gets into other questions of economics and societal philosophy and the free rider problem, to talk about people's pages and resentments. So they're happy to lend something to somebody in need. Gets also into questions of using people's Wi-Fi. Also draws upon issues like this, that we're talking about you're in need and I can help you out. Or are we talking about a situation where you get off the hook from having to purchase an item in the first place because I'll buy it and you'll just use mine, so I have to bear all the costs for both of us. People get more resentful about that. That's and for understandable reasons. So that maybe opens up a different level of kepeda. And maybe also they also point out that you can't take the item away. You can use it bimkomo. Certainly have to leave it where you found it, but even more so, can't really even move it away during the usage from where you found it. If any of you have, I don't know how many of you use the new RCA sitter, the relatively new RCA sitter, highly recommended and endorsed by RCA shuls and the like. So if you have a new RCA sitter, there is a section in English there in the back, it's written by some guy, which talks about the halachos of davening and mitzvos ben adam l'chaveru. And there is a section about all the rules about using somebody else's talis and tefillin based on the poskim surrounding this sugya. So I don't know if you like what that guy has to say, but you could take a look. There is a summary of what some of the practical rules that you find there. So essentially, and there's more to say about this, and I think this will spill over a little bit into tomorrow. Definitely spill over to tomorrow. So I'm moichel because I asked you to be moichel rather because I did promise you'd be up to a bitl today. When still have a few more nekudas about this, so I hope nichole to do this mitzvah and get more Torah, and it should be nichole to something somehow. So please be moichel. But what I think really is the klal here is that it's not really like the donuts. It's not that, okay, there we know these people are happy, and here we know people are happy, and it's all just an expression. I think it is something more fundamental. But that it expresses itself this way, and I will have to expand on this a little bit tomorrow. But that basically what comes out from our sugya is that there is an inherent axiological agreement people have to be involved in mitzvot. Mitzvot are inherently valuable, and that does create a ratzon on behalf of humanity, like the Rambam in Hilchos Geirushin. But what does that do for us? So in our sugi, it does that you can't say it's a mekach tos because I got stuck with a mitzvah, because mitzvahs are good things. And it means that the stam das of a person is that they would be happy to have their stuff used for mitzvah. But the question is, how far does that take us? Is that matir gezel? No, I can't steal somebody's property because they are happy to have mitzvot done for all kinds of reasons. First of all, because the property is their property. And the das, or their happiness of mitzvot, both for fundamental reasons and for practical reasons, wouldn't go that far. And if I were to steal that, adarabba, we know that we have a conflicting principle of mitzvah haba bi'aveira, right? If you steal somebody's stuff to do a mitzvah with, not only is it not justified, but that actually negates the mitzvah. So for sure, this cloud doesn't override gezel. But what it does is it provides that. So we have a cloud that I'm not allowed to steal things for sure. But even borrowing without permission is called stealing. So the Gemara says, Shol shalom midas nikra gazlan. And if you borrow without das, that's called gezel too. So here, what you find is that the ratzon for the mitzvah is called das. Because we know that people like mitzvos, so their desire to have mitzvos done is called das. So as long as that's all you need it to be midaito, so that will provide the das. But there are things that could conflict with that. So if you're actually going to take it away from them, gezel, so it doesn't help. If it's actual gezel for other reasons, so it's still going to be gezel. Or if there are other reasons why it should be against their das, such as it will conflict with their own ability to do mitzvot, or to preserve their item for future mitzvot, so then it goes back to being shalom midas. But if we can narrow it down to the property is protected and it's not being moved and it's not being stolen, but the only issue is shol shalom midas nikra gazlum, so then yichalei le'inish that creates that. So we have to make sure that there's nothing else that makes it shalom midas. So it can't actually be stolen, it can't be moved, it can't be handled in a way that will potentially compromise its mitzvah usage in the future. So all those other details which create additional problems, those have to be accounted for. But when we can be sure that all we have is we've narrowed it down to just an issue of shol shol midas, then the nichale creates the das. So I think that's maybe the pshat here. It's a little more lumdish than the donuts, with all due respect to the donuts. I think that that's probably what we'll see here. And this has a few other nafkaminas halachas. Again, I ask you for your mechila for being a little off schedule. But God willing, I'll have a little more to say about it, and I'll give you some of the makoros that you haven't seen, and then we won't be mavatal or batal anymore, and we'll get to Bitul Chametz. So I wish you all a wonderful day of many mitzvot happening both by you and through you. You should have a day where you have much noichas, a synergy from last week's parasha. You should have much nicha and noach in your life from all the mitzvot that are happening because of you. And I look forward to seeing you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Okay, enjoy.